Give us a call, 615-844-5600. The McFarland Show with Darren and Justin.
Rolling along on this beautiful Thursday here in Middle Tennessee. Hot days are ahead.
Yes, they are.
For all those who are wanting it, you're about to get it.
Here it comes.
Darren and Justin here with you. Strikers Bear Family Fun Center Studio. You can watch us until 4 o'clock today on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. He's not going to be seeing this interview because he is driving. He's Alex Doherty, Penalty Box Radio. He now joins us. Alex, tell everybody what you and Sean are up to today.
Yeah, well, we are in, we just passed Bradley, Illinois. I don't know anything about Bradley, Illinois, other than I just drove by it. But we are, Sean and I, with Penalty Box Radio, we are on the way to watch Game 4 of the Milwaukee Admirals and the Coachella Valley Firebirds, who are locked in a series of the Western Conference Final Series of the AHL playoffs. And, of course, the Milwaukee Admirals are the AHL affiliate of the Nashville Predators. So we've been watching this, you know, pretty closely just because, you know, there's not a lot of hockey going on, but they're still playing. And so we figured, you know, our website, we cover everything Nashville hockey, including the prospects, including the draft and everything. And so we are going to go watch the Milwaukee Admirals and see how they do in this game. They're currently down in the series 2-1. But if they tie this game up the way it works, they got three games at home. So they have games 4 and 5 are both at home. And then if they can win both these games, then they have a lead in the series and they could go to the Calder Cup final for the first time in quite a while.
Well, yeah, it's been 17 years since they've been in the Western Conference Finals. So,
right,
without a doubt. Alex, you know, in all the times coming on here this offseason, I've been pretty consistent with one question. And that question was, this is not passing the smell test. This is not adding up. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it played out. How did, when the news got out there, when it started circulating and the days are running together because of Labor Day, when was all this? Tuesday morning when we learned of this?
Yeah.
What were your initial thoughts?
Well, you know, I would say let's go back for a few weeks. So, you know, after that press conference, after the season-ending press conference with John Hines there and Barry Trotz there, where he made the quote, or where he said, you know, he's under contract, I think that was like kind of the first sign of like, okay, this is something's a little different here. And then every day that goes by from there, so that was 6 weeks ago, every day that goes by, you know, your percentage chance of John Hines being the coach next year just goes down a little bit each day, a little bit each day. And then, you know, we get word from Elliot Friedman that, you know, a decision is coming soon. Don't really know what that means. Don't even know what that decision is going to be. But then, you know, obviously, as soon as Kevin Weeks tweeted something about the about Nashville and kind of not even made the news yet, but he tweeted about Nashville. He had a picture of downtown Nashville there. I was like, okay, something's happened. There's got to be some news. So I was ready to see what it was. And then, yeah, we learned. And my reaction was less surprised at the John Hines firing, a little bit more surprised at who they hired to replace him. Only because, you know, I wouldn't have guessed that would have been the top choice. I mean, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But I do think it's a good hire, and we could talk about that. But, I do think that Andrew Brunette is going to bring in some welcome changes that we heard about on Wednesday. I think it's probably a good decision. I do think that there's a lot to be said about what they did with John Hines over the last 6 weeks.
Okay. Like what? I was – look – Justin asked me, and he knows the last 2 days on the show. I mean, I don't enjoy, but we try to keep it real on here and, you know, give our honest assessment. We're not looking, you know, to get people to – we're not just throwing stuff out there to get people to listen, okay? We're just trying to give our honest assessment. And I just said, you know, as much as I highly, highly, highly respect Barry Trotz and have known him for a very, very long time and have interviewed him hundreds of times over the years.
Yeah.
I am perplexed that, you know, it was handled this way because David Poyle and Barry Trotz are Hall of Fame coach and general managers, and they're Hall of Fame people. And, you know, I'm sorry. I just know it doesn't take that long to assess. I mean, he had been assessing since or evaluating. Let's go with the word that's been used. It just doesn't take that long to evaluate. They know. And so I'm not sure why they just didn't go on and tell John Hines, man, we appreciate everything you did. You know, 4 years, you know, you're a classy guy. You're a really good hockey coach, but I think we're just going to go in a different direction. That tends to happen with a new general manager. And thanks for your service. You know, we really appreciate you and everything you did. And just call it a day. I mean, that's what it is. And as you know, there's a big faction of the fan base that would have been totally fine with it because they weren't in the John Hines camp to begin with. So this whole he's out and new guy is in on the same day, I just don't understand it.
Yeah, and then also considering the fact that one of their finalists was Carl Taylor. I mean, and so if one of your finalists is already someone that you have, not only that you have in-house, sort of, but that also is interested in the job. I mean, Carl Taylor clearly wanted the job too. Why do you need to hold on to the guy that you're probably going to fire? I mean, none of that really makes a lot of sense. It seemed a little bit, it seemed out of character, to be honest, with Trotz. But, you know, maybe he was, I don't know exactly why he approached it that way. But if you think about what he did with Hines at the end of the season, saying to them, as he said yesterday, saying to them, okay, we've got to evaluate. We're going to look at all of our options. I'm going to make a decision at the end of May. And this is on, presumably, you know, middle of April, so 6 weeks ago. I mean, if I'm John Hines, I'm like, well, that's it then. I mean, I know it doesn't take him 6 weeks to evaluate me as a coach. I know that's not going to happen. So, obviously, he wants to go somewhere else. I better pack my bags and figure out where else I want to go. So, Hines probably saw this coming and probably was like, I've got to figure out another option because clearly, at the end of May, I'm going to be out of a job, or by the end of May. And so that right there does seem very out of character. It seems very odd way to start your tenure as a GM, especially for a former coach, especially for a guy that, I mean, everyone says nice things about Barry Trotz. I mean, everyone likes him. And there's so many people in, not just in Nashville, but in hockey who love Barry Trotz. To do something like that to a guy and burn a bridge that really didn't need to be burned. And so I don't think John Hines would have had any real issue. I mean, other than losing his job, but would have had a real issue with Barry coming in and saying, you know, even the day after the season, hey, John, you did a great job. We appreciate your work. We're moving on. John probably says, you know what? I've been there. I understand. I'll move on. And I'll walk away. So, yeah, this last 60 days or whatever it's been, or not 60 days, but 40 whatever days, has been very odd that's how it worked out. And it is a very odd way to start the Barry Trotz tenure as GM.
I've also been saying that the more this went on and the more Milwaukee kept playing and there was all this limbo stuff and none of this was making sense, I've also been saying it feels like Carl Taylor is going to be added to this coaching staff. I didn't say in a head coaching, I said probably as an assistant. It feels like they're waiting for Milwaukee's season to be over, and Carl Taylor is going to be an addition on this staff. Dan Lambert is out. He was also a part of the news. I kind of feel like Carl Taylor, I still feel that Carl Taylor is going to be on this staff. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I think that's a strong possibility. Two things on that front. I mean, number one, Barry said yesterday pretty confidently, yes, I think Carl Taylor will have a chance at a NHL job, and he's saying that with this confidence. Seems like, well, you might be the one to actually give him that job, right, Barry? And then the other thing is, I don't know that, I mean, Andrew Brunette, he has, what, 71 games as a head coach experience in Florida, and the rest is all assistant coaches. It's not like he has some roster, some Rolodex of assistant coaches to pull from, right? I mean, he's very new at this, so he probably doesn't already have his power play guy that he already has on speed dial to call up and say, hey, come with me to Nashville. I mean, Barry said, you know, I want him to find his guy, but I mean, if I'm Andrew Brunette, I'm just like, whoa, sounds like this would be a perfect fit because Carl Taylor has had such good progress down there in Milwaukee and is a, to help with the offense and the power play, and let's bring him on. So, yeah, I would say that's a very, very strong possibility. I would also add, just because I saw some people asking about this, what about Dan Hyno? What about Todd Richards? I think it sounds like they're going to be on board too. I mean, Dan Hyno did a great job last year and made a lot of progress with the penalty kill, and the players love him. Keep him around. Don't just end that relationship for no reason. Todd Richards has connections with Brunette as well, so that seems to be – so there's your – is that your staff? Is it Brunette, Paul Taylor, Dan Hyno, Todd Richards on opening night? I think that's a strong possibility.
Yeah, and I know Barry tried to, you know, and I respect this, and I do believe that he means it because, look, he's had coaches forced on him over the years, okay? And I'm sure coaches don't appreciate it. And it's not just here. It's all around the league. Coaches have an assistant thrust upon them from people above them. It happens in this business. And I can truly understand why that's probably a sensitive thing for him. I get it because, you know, you're supposed to be able to be surrounded in the foxhole, in the trenches, with people you know and trust. Mm-hmm. And you don't want, not that you don't trust the people above you, but, you know, you just don't want them telling you, hey, this is the new guy you're going to be, that's going to be in your foxhole. And it's like, really? So I do believe that, but I also think that this, it does feel like this organization wants to reward, they think highly of Carl Taylor. They probably believe he wants, you know, he should be rewarded for the work he's done. And the best way to reward him is to let him be a coach in the NHL. So it makes a lot of sense. I think they know if they keep him in Milwaukee, he's probably not going to be there that much longer. That's just my two cents.
Right, I agree with that. And then I don't mean to get too far ahead of things here, but do you think it's possible? Maybe I think it's probably possible that the other option or the other reason they could be bringing Charles Taylor up is to go ahead and get him the NHL experience. If the Brunette thing doesn't work out, if the team doesn't make progress there, it's a pretty natural progression to just elevate him to the head coaching spot in case things go south. So. Just it kind of makes the Carl Taylor transition, if the goal is to make him the head coach at some point for good, you know, it just gives an option. Again, that's probably thinking too far ahead, maybe thinking too many moves. But
well, look,
just an idea.
When someone's in your camp, that's when you really know. That's when you really know what somebody's about, right? Like, you can do homework. I mean, I get it. He's in their camp from a distance in Milwaukee, but, you know, Scott Nichols there all the time. I get it. They know the makeup of Carl Taylor, but when you're truly around someone every day, that's when you really get to know that person, right?
Yeah.
And so that would help them in their evaluation too on whether what you just said, if that were to play out, they would know all about him because they've been around him every day.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there you go. And you know, I do think this one thing to think about with Trotz here is this obviously sets up a scenario where his general manager, you know, characteristics, whatever kind of general manager he's going to become, starts with this move, right? This is, I mean, obviously you had the trades and everything, but this is really the first major move. I mean, this is his guy. This is who he wanted to hire. He was the one talking at the press conference. David Poyle hardly talked at all. So it's like, this is his move. What is this going to say for, like, what the rest of his general manager, you know, role is going to be? I mean, it seems like he's going to be a big risk taker, and he's going to be a big swing kind of guy. And I'm going to try to do a lot of things that are going to make difference. I'm not going to just be accept, you know, things as they are. I'm always going to try new things and take risks. I think that's a really interesting way to go about it, and I think that it's certainly off to an interesting start. Regardless, it's off to an interesting start.
Well, I saw some of the quotes that you put out there from yesterday, and I'm thinking some of those were in the scrum with Barry Trotz, and, you know, talking about, you know, I can find third and fourth line guys all day long, which is true, but he wants to, you know, get some people get guys that'll get people out of their seats, take some swings, like you said. you know, that's great, and that's actually refreshing to just have someone say it. But the reality is, isn't that what every general manager in the league is trying to do? Really? I mean, if you get down to it, again, sometimes it's just nice to hear it, though, right?
It was nice to hear. I thought it was interesting. That wasn't a scrum, and it happened towards the end because, you know, after the major kind of press conference, we split off. I talked to Andrew Burnett first and then went over to Trotz. And I, you know, he was, first of all, you know this, Darren, but for those that don't know, Barry Trotz is a talker. I mean, there are going to be some seriously long general manager press conferences with this guy because, I mean, two questions is like 20 minutes. I'm not even joking. This guy just goes on, and it's all good. It's all quality stuff. It's just you really can't get too many questions in because he gets one or two, and it's like he's off and running. So anyways, the reason I say that is it was kind of towards the end. And I don't even know if the question that was asked was about the draft. I assume it was. But as soon as I heard that, the reason that I thought it was interesting is it's sort of just the way he put it. I think he seemed very sincere about the way he was going to direct his scouting staff to go after this. And I do think that saying to the public that I've told my scouts to take some risks is an interesting strategy. I mean, I don't – maybe there's other GMs that have said that. Maybe David Poyle said something like that in the past. But I haven't heard it much because, you know, what that means is there's 13 picks for this team this coming draft. What that means is – we might only hit on one of these dudes, maybe two. One or two of these dudes might actually turn out. But the one that does, as he said, will get you out of your seat. And that's what he wants. And so, you know, I think the philosophy in the past has been we've got to fill a roster. We've got to get a bunch of bodies. And we've got to get guys that can develop and grow slowly over time. It doesn't sound like that's going to be the strategy anymore. And that's kind of refreshing for a lot of fans.
Why Andrew Brunette?
Well, I think part of it is, well, I think the biggest thing is offense. I think that's what he's going to bring. And now the problem is, Justin, that we don't have a huge resume for him. We have a very good resume, but it's very brief. He had one season in Florida, well, not even a full season, that ended up being President's Trophy winning team. And that team was extremely good offensively. And he also saw some growth with some players that had not really seen that kind of growth prior to being there. But it's hard to tell. I mean, was he just implementing John Quenneville's system or was he changing things on the fly? How much did he really influence last season's New Jersey Devils? I mean, it sounds like the power play was pretty much all him, which is great because that was a pretty good power play for the Devils. So I think it's about offense. It's about power play, you know, improving the power play, getting more goals on the board. They've been kind of stuck in this mold of, well, we've got great goaltending. We've got good defensemen. That's all we could do well. And we're going to either lose or win based on that fact. Now it's like, we've got to focus on offense. We've got to move some of these pieces around, improve our offense, get a guy in here that can improve the scoring of this team. So that to me, that's the number one. Maybe number two is I think they think he might be a little bit better at developing some of these young players, as I mentioned earlier, than John Hines was. Some of the hesitation with Hines to work with Eli Tolvanen, to work with Cody Glass and Tommy Novak early on. I think it was like they need a guy in there who wants to put these guys in tough situations and let them struggle, let them figure it out, so that they can grow their game. And so that's got to be the second thing. But the number one thing is offense, for sure.
All right. Last time we talked about the fact there were a number of openings around the NHL. If Andrew Brunette is so great and has a lot of potential, and there's no reason to think he doesn't based on what the limited information we have, why didn't anybody else hire him? Why was he open and available to be hired with this many openings around the league?
I missed it for a second. You're talking about Brunette, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, well, I mean, I think because he was an assistant on New Jersey's team, and they were still in the playoffs, you know, he couldn't talk to anybody. But then I do think he interviewed elsewhere. It was reported today that he was a finalist for the Columbus position. So I think he was possibly looked at elsewhere. He mentioned several that there were other teams. He didn't say who they were, but I would be willing to bet he interviewed with Columbus and probably Washington and probably New York or Anaheim, one of those teams. But he said in his yesterday that it was pretty much all about Barry Trotz. He said, when Barry calls, you listen. You pick up the phone. The respect that he had for Barry Trotz is probably more likely than anything what brought him to Nashville. That's what I would say to that.
You know, last but not least for me, Alex, is they talked about the fact that he was a former Predator, and that, you know, it brings part of the culture, you know, those kinds of things. But this is my rebuttal to that. He was only here for one season, and the first season. And, you know, that team didn't exactly set the world on fire, and they weren't supposed to. They were an expansion team in 1998. How much of the culture does he really know, you know, being that he was here for one season? I'm not even sure if the Like It, I Love It song was around the first season. I mean, was Fang Fingers out the first season? You know, were we telling people they you know, S the first season? Were we doing that? I mean, so how much of the culture does he really have in him?
Yeah, you got a good point. He was only here for one season. He did play against Nashville for a number of years. I mean, he was...
Okay, that's fair.
I think he was in that league up until maybe 2012, 2011, something like that. I think he's 48 years old now. So there is that. So he at least saw them for a number of years after that, including some of the competitive years and the All Korea days and whatnot. Mm. But maybe more than that is... He had a relationship prior to that with Barry and with David Poile because he was drafted by the Capitals when David Poile was there. He mentioned that yesterday. Mm. So I think since they kind of all had the same mindset early on with Poile and Barry Trotz in the American League and everything, I think that's kind of part of it too. So the 1 year in Nashville, that's a great point. Maybe the Nashville part of it isn't as important, but he did have a working knowledge and a history of the quote-unquote Predator way, even when it was not in Nashville.
Alex, you guys enjoy the trip. Have fun. Thanks for doing this. Be safe, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
Definitely. Yep. We'll see you later. Thanks.
All right. That is Alex Doherty, Penalty Box Radio. Does a great job. Those guys, him and Sean Smith, covering the Predators for them on their way up to Milwaukee to cover the Milwaukee Admirals in the Western Conference Final. Down.